what's up, people? Welcome to the Wrestling Podcast. There's WRSTLING, all of the graps without the E. My name is Liam. I'm joined with my co-host, Gareth. How you doing, man?
Hey, man. I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing today?
Yeah, feeling fine, feeling happy, and delighted to be here. Episode one of the Wrestling Podcast on the Inside the Ropes Network. Big shout out to those guys for giving us... Oh, man, absolutely. And thanks so much for everybody that's tuning in and downloading this one. Thank you very much for giving us your time. We hope you enjoy this journey with us. Just a bit of a recap on what we're going to be looking to do here on the Wrestling Podcast. We're exploring all professional wrestling outside of WWE and AEW. We're looking at the likes of New Japan, AAA, Ring of Honor. We're going all over the world, the UK, Australia, Europe, everywhere we can get our hands on some wrestling, some promotions that we know already, some that we don't. We want you to come on this journey with us. So we've got socials set up. We'll tell you those at the end of the episode, but please get in touch if there's any promotions, any matches that you feel that we should be looking at. But we move, man, and we're starting off this week's show with the Ring of Honor Pure Title Tournament. So just a bit of background, Ring of Honor has been around for a while. It was an indie powerhouse back in the early noughties. The Pure Title was a big part of that, actually. It was a really interesting, unique match type with a specific rule set which played into pure grappling. Technical wrestling, you weren't allowed to hit with a closed fist. You had X amount of rope breaks. It was a really interesting take on professional wrestling. But as memory serves, guys, it didn't necessarily take off all that well back in the day.
No, it was used sort of interestingly. Like, there were some champions that you're a bit like, huh? Like John Walters, you know, especially considering how sort of stacked the roster was at the time. Got a little bit forgotten about at times. Was never really kind of lived up to its full potential, I really think, until Nigel McGuinness got hold of it. And
sure, yeah,
it kind of, and then he was just so good at utilizing those rules to do finishes to matches that people would hate or love to hate. It was just really interesting, like, how each time against opponents he was going to sneak out with the belt, you know, utilizing the rules in a very frustrating but clever way.
Yeah, and I think the belt's demise came around with then world champion Bryan Danielson having a bit of an issue with a quote-unquote secondary title or another title stepping on his toes as he perceived it. So he and McGuinness eventually had a big clash. I think it was even in Liverpool.
It was Liverpool. We were at the show the night after. Very disappointing to have missed. we there were so many injuries on that show. So the card got changed like top to bottom. Yeah, it was a bit of a bummer when you consider what happened the night before.
Yeah, I think it was Danielson and Roderick Strong.
Yeah, and also, and there was Suwa. He defended it twice on the show.
Oh, okay. I know Go Shizaki was there, wasn't he, from Pro Wrestling Noah?
Possibly. We're just gonna
remember everybody chanting "Let's go, go," which was okay.
We're gonna have to like look up the results now. Like, I've got that DVD somewhere.
Anyway, that's a tangent, the first of many, I'm sure. But getting back to modern day, so ROH have resurrected this title in storyline at the behest of Jonathan Gresham, one of the foremost technical wrestlers on the planet. Good spot for Gresham there. And we've got this tournament. And as we've seen throughout the pandemic, tournaments tend to be the way that these promotions, even the big promotions, are handling the no-fans environment.
Yeah, it seems to be the way to go. It's kind of a way with a limited crew, you can run lots of shows, have storylines branch off them eventually, mm-hmm. you know, and it gives all the shows some kind of meaning. Like, they're not just fighting for no reason, these guys. There's a reason for these matches to be taking place without there needing to be or needing to acknowledge necessarily the storylines that were going on before everything shut down.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense, but it is very much tournament season.
Oh my God.
Particularly in Japan. But we'll get to that in future episodes. But focusing for now on ROH, so we have seen thus far at time of recording episodes 1, 2, and 3, so 6 matches in total. What have you thought of this, Gaz?
I've absolutely loved it. It's been such a treat. I haven't watched ROH in so long, which, when you consider from about 2004 to about 2007, I think I watched like every show. I would,
yeah, it was the go-to.
I would literally stay up on the ROH message boards refreshing as results came in because I wanted to know what was happening. And and then it just completely dropped off for me at a certain point. Like, I think all this kind of talent I really enjoyed had gone elsewhere. I think it was probably around the time like Jerry Lynn was champion was probably when I kind of stopped watching.
Yeah, okay.
I probably tuned in here and there. Like, I recall there was, I think there was like the ladder war between Steen and El Generico that kind of brought me back in for a couple of shows. But yeah, that was about it. So this has kind of brought me back in and brought me back in a very exciting way. Like, it's made me really kind of want to watch going forward.
Yeah, I can't emphasize enough just how good these shows have been, actually. The presentation in particular has been magnificent, genuinely. And I actually heard Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez of the Wrestling Observer newsletter talking about this as well and praising it. And quite rightly so. I mean, the way this has been done is you get two matches per show and each wrestler gets his own video package discussing their background, why they want to wrestle for the Pure title. And I think that's probably been the best part about this, is everybody's had a chance to establish the why.
Definitely.
Why are we doing this? Why am I going to go fight this guy? And as a result, each match has been packed with meaning, there's been stakes, and I just think the general presentation has been superb.
Oh, 100%. I've really enjoyed the sit-down interviews, giving us the information that you need to kind of really get excited for a match, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Giving us the backstory between Dalton Castle and Jay Lethal, for instance, on the first show, that they've fought before and the results, and that this is, I think they were like 1-1 before this. So this was in singles competition. I believe this was the sort of tiebreak for them. And
yeah, same goes for the Finlay Rocky Romero match. You know, they went into detail about how Finlay had come up in the New Japan Young Boy system and how Rocky had played a big part in helping him over in New Japan. Mm. So this was a really good mentor protege kind of matchup as well.
It's good because I do think indie wrestling at times expects you to do the work that, like, you know, you need to have done the research or have watched the stuff to understand why this match is important, like where these people have tangled before. So I really like that it's kind of laid out for you. You know, I do think sometimes promotions go the opposite way and expect fans to have super short memories. So I like that, you know, you've got ROH digging into people's past. You know, you've got them showing the relationship between Seidel and Delirious going back 20 years.
How good was that? Yeah, absolutely. I remember them wrestling initially when they were first breaking in.
100% got the DVD, the the ROH Reborn shows that they wrestled on, like, for their first matches in the company.
Man, that was really cool. Really cool to see those guys wrestle again. And they're still fantastic as well, particularly together. I mean, specifically Delirious, what shape that guy is in. For a bloke that doesn't wrestle a full-time schedule, he looks phenomenal.
The guy's jacked.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so the matches that were on deck across the three episodes. Episode one had Jay Lethal versus Dalton Castle, and then Jay Lethal's co-tag team partner, current ROH tag team champions, Jonathan Gresham against the debuting Wheeler Yuta. Anything stand out from those two matches from you?
The Dalton Castle Lethal match was what a match to start the tournament off of. Possibly the biggest match of the opening round, two former world champions going head-to-head. So I thought that was really interesting, you know, that they basically go, you know, here's the biggest thing we can offer you in this.
Yep.
It did a really good job of reeling me in, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Wheeler Yuta, really impressed.
Same, yeah. I'd seen him before in MLW and honestly didn't think that much of him. But here, I think with the added backstory as well, getting a chance to understand his personality, and I thought he really performed.
Definitely. It was a huge opportunity for Yuta, and I think he really delivered.
Yeah. I mean, one sort of nasty side effect of the Gresham-Wheeler Yuta match, have you ever had it when... This is a tangent... Have you ever had it when somebody's told you, like, you snore, and you're like, I don't snore, this is rubbish, and then you have that weird snore where you can just about hear it as well, and it kind of wakes you up, and you're like, oh, crap. So, you know, my wife is always telling me that when I eat really good food, I sort of make sex noises. So, like, I have, like, some pizza or some ice cream in the theatre, all casual, and I'll go like, and, you know, so I won't go into detail here. But I found myself doing it watching Jonathan Gresham do chain wrestling.
Oh, no.
It was terrible. It was so slick. I couldn't help it. I just made a noise and was like, oh, God. Jesus, man, stop it. Anyway, moving on.
I really liked Gresham just absolutely destroying poor old Yuta's leg for the win. Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting finish. Like, you don't see that a lot. Somebody literally just tapping out because you're having a part destroyed rather than it being necessarily a submission maneuver.
Makes perfect sense.
One thing I've liked about a couple of the episodes here is they've almost had a little narrative running through the individual episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So in this one, for instance, you had the co-holders of the tag team champion both trying to progress.
Yeah.
And then in two, it felt like a little, almost like a little time capsule, taking us back to the early days of ROH, you know, with Rocky, with Seidel, with Delirious. And it's just...
you forget how long Rocky's been around.
Definitely.
Actually, don't you?
Part of the Havana Pitbulls, one of the early sort of tag team champions in Ring of Honor.
He's so good, isn't he? He's like the ultimate utility player, and that's not meant to be derogatory. He just does everything and does it really well.
Classic ROH going head-to-head, and then old v new in Finlay and Rocky.
Yeah, and actually, to be fair, you could extend that to episode 3, because you had Silas Young and Josh Woods on either side of the brackets. Those guys are tag.
Exactly.
Those guys are on a tag team as well. And just on the Silas Young match, he was against the debuting Fred Yehi, who I've seen before in Evolve and sort of thought was okay. But here, he looked phenomenal. I thought he put in a really, really good showing. And a lot of these guys, you know, who knows, maybe there's a full-time job on offer here. But I thought he made a really good case for being on TV on a weekly basis.
Yeah, he made a very good account of himself, didn't he?
So next week, for the final of the first round matchups, we have Hot Sauce Tracy Williams against the rather inconveniently named Rust Taylor. I have to really enunciate, otherwise he sounds like Rust Taylor, and that's far less impressive. So that's Rust as in corroding metal. He's good, actually. He was on New Japan Strong. Very good indeed. And also PJ Black, the former Justin Gabriel, against Tony Deppen, who's somebody that I've seen on GCW and quite enjoyed. So that should be a good match.
It should close out a very fun, exciting first round of the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's move on to the New Japan of USA offering, which was the Lions Break Crown tournament. So just a little bit of background there. So New Japan, one of the biggest promotions in Japan, huge amount of history, and a real powerhouse in professional wrestling today, probably the biggest promotion outside of the big two in the whole planet. They recently, I think it was in October 2019, officially launched New Japan of USA, looking to diversify their content into different markets. And this has been really interesting thus far, because they've brought in a lot of real indie talent, as well as focusing on the guys that are currently training under Katsuro Shibata at the LA Dojo. So this has been a show really to put a spotlight on some of those guys. We haven't been told what the winner of this tournament gets as yet, but one could assume that it would help them on their way to debuting in New Japan proper.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, you really hope so, don't you, that there's going to be some of these guys pop up on the big stage.
So what did you make of this show?
Well, it's really interesting talking about this directly after ROH, just because it's very easy to kind of contrast the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you're right.
Another tournament, as we said, wrestling currently is just chock full of tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's no different. But with this one, it felt like there's nothing on the line. You're not told anything about the competitors or why they would want to fight. It's very much wrestling in a vacuum, wrestling for the sake of wrestling, which, when it is top notch and is done by wrestlers maybe you're very familiar with, can be fantastic. But I think sometimes if it's people that you've never seen before, or that sort of aren't necessarily the most engaging off the bat, like don't jump off the screen, it can be tough to watch. I'm not saying I didn't find this tough to watch at all, but I could see if you weren't already a fan of New Japan, this and what they've got going on and the kind of Lions Break stuff that's preceded it, this isn't going to be the jumping on point for you.
Yeah, do you know what? That's a really good point. I think what we talked about with the ROH Pure tournament, the video packages where they introduced each person and gave them a reason for fighting, would have really come in handy here.
Oh, so much.
Just to give you something on who these guys are.
Like a little character hook for each one, I think would have made the world of difference.
Absolutely, because, you know, the wrestling on display here was very, very good. There's four matches on the show, so the whole of the first round was in this one show. They had to get their skates on. You know, that's a lot to fit into 1 hour. But the wrestling on display was decent. It was just there. It was more challenging to become invested as opposed to the ROH presentation, which immediately hooked you in.
There wasn't necessarily that room to breathe and do character work because you had to have four matches in slightly under an hour.
Yeah, absolutely. That said, though, there was some really good wrestling on display. Clark Connors, who is one of the young lions currently training under Shibata at the LA Dojo, I thought he looked phenomenal in his match against Jordan Clearwater. Like, very, very impressive.
So, for my mind, the story of this match was the LA Dojo versus an outsider.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, sure.
And I really like, you know, you had Clark obviously finish him off with the traditional finishing hold of the New Japan Young Lions, the Boston Crab.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a top prospect at the dojo beating a well-traveled indie guy.
Yeah. No, you know, I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. It was almost an advertisement for the Shibata style of the training.
That definitely is how it kind of came across to me. But yeah, like elsewhere on the card, we had another really good match in Danny Limelight versus Barrett Brown.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, for me, this was the match of the night, actually.
Yeah, it was a real standout, wasn't it? It felt like a real exhibition for Danny Limelight.
Yeah, it did. And it wasn't a squash match, you know.
No.
Barrett Brown got in a good amount of offense, but yeah, definitely. It seemed to really show off what Danny Limelight's all about and what he could offer. And for me, it was a bit of a shop window outing for the Best of the Super Juniors. Assuming that goes ahead, actually.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to see. He's got everything to lose in this tournament. I think he's the man to watch. Him and Connors, for me, are probably heading for the finals. I'd be surprised if it was anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some beautiful moves on display here as well. Danny Limelight, the move that he won with, that, I don't know how to describe it, double jump or triangle tornado DDT?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was good stuff.
Absolutely stunning.
Yep, really enjoyed that. So, you know, a decent show. Looking forward to seeing where it goes, particularly as we get to know the guys more. What have we got on tap for the next round?
So, the next round is going to be Logan Regal against Clark Connors. And then on the other side of the bracket, it's going to be Danny Limelight taking on Blake Christian.
Fantastic. Okay, very much looking forward to that. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about DDT.
So we're back, and in this segment of the show, we're going to be looking at DDT Wrestling's Who's Going to Top 2020 show. So a little bit of background on DDT. The DDT in their name stands for Dramatic Dream Team. They were formed in 97. They get pigeonholed by a lot of people as just being a comedy promotion, but that's very much not the case. You know, they have lots of different styles of wrestling on show, but I think it's the kind of the comedy stuff over the years has got picked up by Western audiences, and like it's been gift and shared and that kind of thing, which is, I think, why there's that impression of it.
The stuff that I've heard of was, you know, like the Giant Panda or the ladder winning a title, or stuff like that. It is all the zany stuff, you're right.
Yeah, that's the stuff that, like, I think catches the eye and maybe draws you in, which is maybe a good thing, and then you stay for the excellent wrestling.
Okay, yeah, no, that's fine. That makes perfect sense. And I suppose, to be fair, that makes them a bit of an outlier in Japan, I'm guessing.
Definitely, yeah, that does make them sort of pretty unusual. But yeah, I think they're the kind of the one that kind of offers the more sports entertainment-y style. You know, they often parody WWE stuff, and so like they've had Andre the Giant Panda.
Okay, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're a lot of fun, and like I say, I think having that kind of comedy aspect is like a bit of a hook, but isn't all they're about.
Yeah, sure. No, fair enough. No, that's fair, because there was plenty of good wrestling on this show.
Yeah, and I think this show was kind of no exception to that rule. You know, you had some fun and silly stuff sort of in the middle, but like the top of the card is really good.
Oh,
really strong.
Yeah, that main event was insane. But I suppose we should start from the off, I guess.
In the early parts of the show, I thought that the stuff that really stood out to me was the title match, the DDT Extreme Championship.
Oh, man. That was so great. I absolutely loved that. And actually, I suppose we should say that if you're watching DDT, particularly for the first time, but just generally, if you're an English-speaking viewer, you're not that fluent in Japanese or fluent at all in Japanese, a really good way to keep up to date with what's going on is to watch this in conjunction with the DDT English Update Twitter feed, because they actually transcribe the whole show and give you a bit more background on what's actually happening, what's being said in the promos, and also breaking down some of the more, unique stipulations that we see. And their handle on Twitter is at DDTPro_ENG. So I'll just go through the rules of the DDT Extreme Championship, because this is an interesting one. So each wrestler has 5 points at the start of the match, and they lose a point when they either go down, they escape to the ropes, they get knocked out, they tap out, or best of all, they laugh at their opponent's joke. Okay, so the first wrestler to lose all 5 points loses the match.
So when I was watching this and I read the rules, it felt very much like the ROH Pure Title rules had just been put through Google Translate.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And the best of all, though, because, yeah, I didn't know what this was going in, and fortunately, subscribing to the DDT English Twitter feed, I got to see those rules. The DDT Extreme Champion is Shinya Aoki. Do you know much about him?
I don't.
MMA fans will be all too aware of Shinya Aoki. He's a legendary mixed martial artist and still competes, actually. His most recent fight was in October last year in one championship. This is a guy that's had over sort of 50 professional fights and is genuinely considered to be one of the greatest of all time. And then you've got him in a match where he could potentially lose a fall by laughing at a joke. It's wonderful. It's absolutely great. And I thought he was brilliant here. He really played his part well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, this was a really fun match. Enjoyed some of the stupid gags from Honda.
Yeah, Antonio Honda. He was wonderful. He appeared to have no pain threshold whatsoever. So it was essentially, as soon as Aoki got hold of him, he'd basically tap out. I love this match so much, though, because there was a really nice story throughout, because there was a box of props positioned in the ring, and it was like a costume box, if you ever had one of those when you were a kid. And whenever Honda managed to make it to the box, he'd get a prop and make a joke and generally get a fall out of Aoki. But the whole time, Aoki was trying to defend that. So that was the story of the match, essentially.
I like Aoki kind of gave him a fighting chance, and anytime he made it to the box, it was like he was on pause and had to wait for him to kind of come up with something before he could start fighting again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think my absolute favourite part of this match was at one point, it was a bit like in New Japan or Noah, or more serious Japanese strong style wrestling, where you have that sequence where the guys are just going to go blow for blow and let's just see what happens. And he just stood there and encouraged Honda to try and make him laugh. And that was DDT's version of this. It was wonderful. Really good stuff.
Had the rush of adrenaline, was like pumped up. It was like, come on.
Come on, make me laugh.
This kind of thing that breaks up a card really nicely.
And so after the match was over, Shinya Aoki got on the mic and made a challenge to DDT president Takagi, who's also a pro wrestler as well. And it looks like that one's going to go down at DDT's big show of the year, which is Ultimate Party. The KOD Tag Championship match was also very, very good. UK fans, you know these men, Chris Brooks and Drew Parker, were the challengers up against Yuke Uno and Naomi Yoshimura. I hadn't seen the champions before, Gaz, had you?
No, I hadn't.
So I've got down here, just making some brief notes whilst I was watching, Uno looks and feels like a young Kota Ibushi.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
He sort of had springs in his legs and was very cool. And then Yoshimura, have you ever seen one of those documentaries about South America where you have the bit of the Amazon that meets the Rio Negro and you've got the sort of, the water becomes like a yin yang, so you've got like half of it's darker and half of it's lighter. You ever seen that?
I have not.
Give it a Google, listeners. Give it a Google, culture. But the reason I bring it up is because Yoshimura's hair was a bit like that, in so much as half of it was like a tribute or an homage to Aja Kong, and the other half was a tribute to Bam Bam Bigelow, but there was no crossover whatsoever. It was divided right down the middle. It's really good stuff. I liked him a lot.
Just based off of that match and kind of what happened after, it really seems like they're a really integral part of the ecosystem of DDT.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
They successfully defended their titles in what I thought was a really enjoyable match, and it was really nice seeing Brooks and Drew Parker.
Yeah, really was.
In action.
Yeah, how good has Drew Parker got, by the way, whilst he's been out in Japan in particular?
I like his cut and colour he's had as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And really nice to see Chris Brooks as well. It shows you how much you miss the UK indie scene. But nice to see Brooksy in particular, his gorgeous float over octopus hold, which is just a thing of beauty.
It was Brooks who took the fall in this match, and Brooks holds the DDT Universal Championship.
Mm.
So afterwards it got set up that on the DDT TV show on October 10th, Yoshimura is going to challenge Brooks for the title.
Oh, okay. Oh, nice. Nice. That sounds good.
Also set up after this match was two title matches. They're going to be on a future show back-to-back. So it's going to be Yoshimura and Yuno defending their tag titles and also challenging for the six-man tag team titles. A lot of title defenses organized here.
Absolutely. And just one thing that came into my head about Chris Brooks is I think at this point he falls into the same kind of category as like an Alex Shelley or Rocky Romero, as one of these guys that has been a part of several really decent tag teams. And whenever you put him in a team with somebody, he just works. He makes tag teams work.
Definitely. Yeah, he's just got it in his bones at this point, I think.
Yeah. Let's get a Chris Brooks, Alex Shelley tag team at some point, though. Please.
Yes, please.
How good would that be?
I think they'd both be very into it as well, if you've ever seen them going back and forth on Twitter.
Oh, man. Okay. Two of the very best right there.
Was there anything else on the card that particularly drew you in, Liam?
We should probably talk about the main event, actually. So that was an 8-person tag team match. This had Daisuke Sasaki, Tetsuya Endo, T-Hawk, and L. Linderman, all representing the Damnation faction. And then Harashima, Kazusada Higuchi, Yukio Sakaguchi, and Yukio Naya. This was a really, really good match. And it went long as well. But for a multi-person match, I thought this was fantastic.
I do love a big 8-person tag team match.
Yeah. And how good everyone's is just getting Linderman? Their stuff in. I just love Linderman.
He's just a jacked little freak.
He's like a blonde ball of energy just running around, but he's so entertaining.
I really enjoyed him.
Yeah,
fantastic. He's somebody that I've seen talked about on Twitter a lot, but hadn't seen him actually go.
Oh, okay.
So this was really exciting.
Yeah, he's really good.
To finally see him in action.
And, you know, T-Hawk's great as well, but there's something magnetic about Linderman. He's wonderful to watch. And had you seen Tetsuya Endo before?
I hadn't. There's so many people on the show that I've heard heaps about, but had not seen in action.
Yeah. I think Endo is top, top draw. He's a really, really good wrestler. He's got a great look, and everything he does is so crisp. It has his own sort of little tilt on it as well, which is lovely. I love it when wrestlers do that. They have their own sort of slight take on a move. Like Austin Aries used to do that a lot. Christian's another good example. And yeah, Tetsuya Endo definitely does that. And Daisuke Sasaki is also a very interesting character and a great wrestler. But the big story of this one didn't come till after the match was over. So the Damnation stable picked up the win. All very good. Sasaki and Endo were already scheduled to face each other at Ultimate Party, DDT's big event. And Sasaki had it in his mind that now would be the perfect time to turn on Endo and put him over, passed him the mic, and no sooner was his back turned, he dropped him with a low blow. And I'm just assuming from what I could see, obviously I don't speak Japanese, but he appeared to implore the rest of the stable to attack Endo, but nobody moved. And then all of a sudden, they turned on him, and it had been a ruse all along. And the plan had been to get Sasaki out of the Damnation stable. And Endo was the new leader and standing tall. I thought it was a really powerful, twisting, turning, interesting, intriguing way of ending this show and putting some real needle into this contest heading into Ultimate Party.
It made me quite sad that I came into this show kind of not being aware of these people and their backstories. So it didn't kind of carry the emotional weight that I think it would have done had I been sort of following DDT for quite some while. But like, it certainly appeared to be really, really well executed, and kind of, it does make me want to see what happens next for sure. Like, even coming in cold.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got a few more events on the road to Ultimate Party. We'll dip in and out, but we are going to be covering Ultimate Party on the podcast on a later episode. And we've also got some really fun DDT features coming your way as well, both on the podcast and on the website. That's itrwrestling.com. So do keep your eyes peeled for those.
Before we finish our overview of the DDT show, I had one little stray thought on the Jun Akiyama match.
Oh yeah.
So watching this match, it was basically a squash, but Akito kind of was strong out the gate, and then Akiyama just turned it around with a big knee and then just absolutely clobbered him with more knees and then some exploders before beating him. And it made me think he basically was working like present day Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, which okay.
I really enjoyed, just like grumpy, just throwing suplexes, throwing knees and smashing somebody. So I'm curious to see whether that carries through to his other matches, or is this just a kind of little one-off?
We will soon find out, because he is slated to wrestle Konosuke Takeshita at Ultimate Party also, so that promises to be a good one.
Off the back of this, it's made me feel like Ultimate Party is a can't miss for me. Like, I'm very excited for that now. I think overall this has really got me on board with DDT, and I think I'll be watching a lot more of this going forward. It's one of those promotions that's been on my radar for a long time, and it's kind of just taken this.
Yeah, likewise. Absolutely.
Get me to finally sit down and kind of watch some, and I'm so glad I did.
100%. And it's on the Wrestle Universe app, is where you can watch DDT. What's good about that is there's also Pro Wrestling Noah, there's Tokyo Yoshi Pro, there's several other promotions as well. So I think it's about 999 yen a month, so about £7 or £8 sterling.
Oh, perfect. That's so much bang for your buck then.
Yeah, absolutely. Well worth a look. Let's leave DDT there. We, as I said, we will be returning to them. But in the meantime, let's go to the news.
So lots of news to cover this week, Liam. We're going to kick things off with Impact. They have got a couple of big shows coming up very soon. So tomorrow there's Victory Road, which is going to be on Impact Plus.
Okay.
Which is going to be headlined by Eric Young defending his title against Eddie Edwards.
Oh, nice. Okay. Interesting.
But there's a couple of other big matches on that. So you've got Motor City Machine Guns defending their tag team titles against Madman, Fulton and Ace Austin.
That sounds good. I like all those guys.
The other title match on the show is Deonna Purrazzo versus Susie for the Impact Knockouts title.
Sweet. Purrazzo's been absolutely amazing since she's joined Impact.
Oh, absolutely. I've been really enjoying Susie as well.
Same. Yeah. I think Impact got arguably the best women's division in North America. Bit of a claim. There we go.
The only place that comes close is NXT's women division.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I think I sort of think Impact's characters are slightly more well-rounded or fleshed
definitely.
Out.
Definitely. It depends whether you just want pure match, pure work rate versus entertainment.
Yeah. I almost think that the women's division has overtaken the X division in terms of the speciality element of
absolutely
Impact that makes it stand out.
Their kind of calling card, like what makes them stand out from everybody else. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. So yeah, we got that going on, and then there's some other good matches on there. I'm looking forward to watching that show, and that's actually why we're going to be covering it on next week's episode.
Woo! Oh yeah, looking forward to that one. Okay, some breaking news from earlier today, time of recording. Shima, Strongheart Shima, OWE Shima, has suffered an unfortunate traffic accident. He was riding his bike, and he's unfortunately been involved in something a bit serious, suffered multiple injuries, including a head injury, nasal fracture, and contusions to his face. But supposedly, reportedly, he is okay. And apparently, he's tweeted out that he's still planning on wrestling on November 3rd. Take all the time you need, Shima. We hope you feel better soon. We miss you. All the love.
And then in other exciting indie news, we've got stuff coming out of The Collective. ACH and Leo Rush has just been announced for Joey Janela's Spring Break.
Oh, Jesus
which I
Christ.
Think is a big one. So you've got two people that have left WWE pretty acrimoniously who are going to have something to prove here.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds fantastic.
So very excited for that. I think that will be, you know, could be match of the Collective weekend.
Whoa, big claim. Oh my word. There's so much good stuff on the Collective.
But, you know, I think their toughest competition is going to come from the very recently announced Bloodsport card. So I know you're excited for this as well, being a big MMA fan.
Bloodsport sounds amazing. Homicide versus Tom Lawler. Are you kidding me?
That's the match I didn't know I needed.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait for that match.
So that's going to be headlined, if you didn't already know, by John Moxley versus Chris Dickinson, which I think should knock it out of the park.
Absolutely.
But I'm going to keep touching wood, you know, crossing my fingers, you're wearing my lucky pants until October 11th when that match actually takes place, just because will the third time be the charm? John Moxley's been supposed to compete in a Bloodsports ring twice now, and two times it's been cancelled, so fingers crossed he makes it.
Yeah, absolutely. Also looking forward to For the Culture, lots of good matches on there. Sugar Dunkerton is going up against Trish Adora. That looks like a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that one.
For the giant belt.
The Pan-African belt. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm.
So that should be really good. So yeah, I'm super excited for that as well. So we'll be covering some of those events at a later date. I'm absolutely certain.
Absolutely. Stay tuned for more on the collective. And over in Japan, more interesting news coming out of Tokyo Yoshi Pro. Sayaka Unagi has handed in her notice. She will not be renewing her contract. And as of September 30th, is now a free agent. So that in isolation, although noteworthy, might not necessarily be groundbreaking, but what is interesting is when you pair that with the fact that Natsumi Maki and Mina Shirakawa had also already left Tokyo Yoshi Pro Wrestling earlier in September, there's a bit of a narrative forming here about people making the move from TJPW and possibly going elsewhere. And when I say elsewhere, I mean Stardom. Over in Stardom, the Yokohama Cinderella Big Show is coming up, and that's another one that we're going to be covering next week here on the podcast. The reason why it's so interesting is that there's currently two mystery opponent slots up for grabs that could quite possibly be any three of these women. And actually, one of those slots is going to be occupied by a new member of the Donna Del Mondo stable. So very interesting times over in the Joshi world in Japan. Looking forward to seeing how that pans out and discussing that event next week.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think we're in for a real treat with what we've got lined up to watch between now and the next episode.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I think that almost wraps us up for our very first episode of the Wrestling Podcast. Thank you guys so much for taking the chance on us and hopefully enjoying the show with us. We do hope to see you next week. In the meantime, we're going to be posting links to all the shows we've talked about on our Twitter account. That's at Wrestling Pod. That's wrestling without the E. Also, if you need more indie-rific, Japanese-centric grappling news, then head on over to itrwrestling.com, where we don't just have WWE or AEW, but both Gareth and myself are working around the clock providing the latest news on New Japan Pro Wrestling and everywhere else in the Elsewhere section. And in addition to that, if that wasn't enough, I'm going to be posting my interview with Filthy Tom Lawler of Major League Wrestling on Wednesday, so do check that one out.
And before we go, I've just got to thank my buddy Robin Hawkins very much for his contribution to the show. He made the wonderful theme music for us. You can find him at Rob_Hawkins on Twitter, or check him out on robinhawkinsmusic.co.uk if you need music making for more or less anything. He's a super talented guy.
Absolutely. Shout out to that man. And that wraps us up for this week. So in the meantime, everybody stay safe, stay happy, and enjoy the graps.